All right, Leviticus 10. Besides maybe Day of Atonement, this might be the most famous chapter in Leviticus because it's the most dramatic.
The first two verses.
I know, it doesn't take long, does it? He gets right to the point. I know, there's not a lot of, preamble. Okay, so chapters 1 through 6, well, 1 through 7, we got the offerings, both the worshiper side and the priest side, okay? And then 8 was the ordination of the priest, and 9 is the very first day of the sacrificial system, right? Aaron offers the sacrifices, because in chapter 8, it's Moses offering the sacrifices on behalf of the priests. And here in chapter 9, it is finally Aaron doing his job as high priest, okay? So he's offering sacrifices for the elders and also for himself, okay? If you remember, chapter 9, verse 24, then fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the portions of fat on the altar. When all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. Okay? So up to this point, everything they've done, as the Lord commanded, as the Lord commanded, as Moses commanded, as the Lord commanded. Okay, over and over again. And God shows that he is pleased and that he has accepted Aaron's offering by sending fire from heaven. Okay, so this is the pinnacle of the book of Leviticus. And when you're at the top, there's only one place to go. Yes. So we're going to see that. This is a theme in Scripture, right? You have creation, Genesis 2, and then Genesis 3, fall. You have the flood, and Noah is righteous, and then he gets drunk. Okay, you have the covenant, yes, we'll obey, and golden calf. Okay, so this, by this point, should not be a surprise. I mean, it's a bummer, but it should not be a surprise. Okay, can someone read for me Leviticus 10, just 1 through 3, just the first three verses?
Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took their respective fire pans, and after putting fire in them, placed incense on it and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. And Moses said to Aaron, it is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I will be treated as holy, and before all the people, I will be honored. So Aaron, therefore, kept silent.
Okay, so failure comes on the first official day of the sacrificial system. Okay, they can't even do it right one day. Okay, which is sad. This highlights the danger of God dwelling with man. We want God to dwell with us. Israel wanted God to be with them, to dwell with them. But now this is the price they're going to pay. It is dangerous to live with God because we are sinful. Man is sinful. Okay? In like I said, in Leviticus 8 and 9, over and over again, it says, as God commanded, as the Lord commanded. So that was the high point. Now, if you notice, it says, end of verse 1, which he had not commanded them. Okay, so that's a big contrast. It should stand out to you. This was not what God had told them to do. So it's like a reversal of chapter 9. You have a high point, God sends fire, and the people shout and worship because God has accepted their offering, and then they just turn around and do something God has not commanded. Okay, Leviticus 9 and 10 together show the blessedness of Israel's access to God as well as the danger, okay, that access to God creates. Okay, so end of chapter 9, everything is good and Israel is happy and dwelling with God is great. And then just a few minutes later, oh, Nelly, what did we get ourselves into, right? Because dwelling with God is dangerous. Okay, Nadab and Abihu, this is not the first time we've met them. Does anybody remember where else we met them? If you remember this, I'd be very surprised. Okay, that's fine. They're the eldest two of Aaron's four sons, okay? So he had four sons, and these are two of them. Okay, if you go to Exodus 24, can someone read for me verse 1? Exodus 24, verse 1.
And he said to Moses, come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and you shall worship at a distance.
Okay, so this is when the covenant is being made between God and man. And remember, the people were not to come up the mountain. Only Moses. But now Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and the 70 elders, they get a special invitation. Now, if you look at verse 2, it says, Moses alone, however, shall come near the Lord. Okay, so they were only allowed partway up the mountain, but still, Nadab and Abihu have come closer to God than anyone else. I mean, them and the 70 elders. Yes, theoretically. Okay, so in Exodus, you know, and it doesn't say Eleazar and Ithamar. Those are the other two sons of Aaron. Okay, so it sounds like they didn't get to go up the mountain, but Nadab and Abihu do, okay? So they had also just been ordained priests with their two brothers, we assume, in Leviticus 8, right? Aaron and his sons. Okay, so what exactly is it that they did? We don't really know, okay? But it says, they took their respective fire pans and after putting fire in them, placed incense on it and offered strange fire before the Lord. Okay, so I'm going to give you four theories of what it is they did. Okay, one of them was that they used the wrong coals. When you offered incense to the Lord, you're supposed to use coals from the altar. Okay, because it says they put fire in them, okay, placed incense and offered strange fire. So maybe it was the coals that were wrong. They used coals from somewhere else, from outside the tabernacle, who knows, okay? The second idea is maybe they offered incense either with the wrong ingredients or just the improper proportions, okay? If you remember in Exodus, it was very exact how they were supposed to make this incense. So maybe they decided, hey, this is a pretty good recipe, but I can improve on it. Either put a little more of this and a little more of that, or add something else, other ingredient altogether. Okay? Possibly it wasn't exactly as God commanded. Even a small deviation is outside what God wants, unholy and punishable by death. Okay? The third theory is that they were drunk. Okay, this comes from, because if you look at verse 9, God is speaking to Aaron right after this happens, and he says, do not drink wine or strong drink. Okay, so then it's like, why in the world did God say that here? There are a couple possible reasons for that, which we'll talk about when we get there. But one, some people think that possibly they were drunk when they were offering, and then maybe also made other mistakes as well because they were drunk, okay? And so God says, don't do that. Because if you look at it, it says, verse 9, so that you will not die. Okay. So either God is emphasizing, hey, don't make this other mistake, or this is the mistake Nadab and Abihu made. Okay. The last theory is that they actually tried to enter the Holy of Holies. Okay. And the reason people think this is if you go to chapter 16, verse 1, okay, 16 is Day of Atonement. Okay, verse 1 says, now the Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron when they had approached the presence of the Lord and died. The Lord said to Moses, tell your brother Aaron that he shall not enter at any time into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat, which is on the ark, or he will die. For I will appear in a cloud over the mercy seat. Okay, and then it goes on to explain the one time Aaron could enter the Holy of Holies, which was on the Day of Atonement. Okay, now it says in chapter 10, strange fire. So that makes it sound more like it was the coals or the incense was wrong, right? Because it specifically seems to be talking about the incense. But because of these other verses, people have come up with other ideas. Okay, yeah.
So with the Holy of Holies.
Yes. No, because God didn't say that until after this happened, right? Because 16.
I was just trying to remember all these rules we've already.
Right.
I'm like, was that in there yet?
No, but they kind of should have known better because on Mount Sinai, right, you weren't even allowed to touch the mountain.
Right.
God was coming down at the top. You couldn't even touch the bottom of it. When Moses went into the tent of meeting to meet with God, no one else could go in. And then when Moses descended in glory on the tabernacle, did I say Moses? Yeah. Whew. Last night, didn't get much sleep. When God descended in his glory on the tabernacle, not even Moses could enter. Okay, so even though God had not specifically said, hey, you can't come in, only once a year can the high priest come in, you'd still think it might be pretty obvious that you just don't go sauntering into God's presence. They were supposed to come from the altar, burnt offering altar. So the wood, right, that then you burn to make the sacrifices, then you were supposed to take some of those coals and put them in your pan and burn the incense on them that way. Okay, so we don't know exactly. The theory is maybe they got their coals from somewhere else. I don't know. Okay, but that would be the if the fire was the wrong. Yes, Kate.
I was just going to say that instead of strange fire,
yes,
profane fire.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I think the idea is even if it's just a little off, yeah, then it is profane. It's bad. Okay. Yeah. Yep. So we are not exactly sure what it is they did, but whatever it was, okay, they manifested a lack of fear of God. Okay, which led to negligence, right? They did not care enough about the holiness of God to obey to the letter. Okay, so either coming into his presence, being drunk, wrong ingredients or wrong proportions in the incense, or if the coals, the actual fire was wrong. Okay, God had been very specific about exactly what it was they were supposed to do. They somehow violated that, okay, and the punishment was death. Right.
Why Cain's offering.
Right. Accepted.
But there was an attitude or a something that
right.
resulted in a practice that was not.
Right.
Right.
Yep. Exactly. Okay. So, verse 2, fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. Okay. We don't know exactly what it is they did, but we do know exactly how God responded. Okay. Well, so that then depends on what you believe that it is they did. Because if they're offering incense, possibly they're in the holy place, right? If they have gone into the Holy of Holies, then that's maybe where they are. But Aaron's cousins can come and carry him out. So my guess is that they would have had to at least have ended up outside the tabernacle proper, because I'm pretty sure no one's wanting to go in there to drag out dead bodies, right? I mean, it doesn't say specifically where they are, but when the fire consumes them, I would assume they were at least outside the tabernacle, would be my guess, just because people have to carry them out. That's funny. That's what I thought too, but obviously there's something left to carry away. Yeah.
Maybe it was one of like those blockbuster explosions where it and it killed them, so then there's just a body, but
crispy.
Yeah.
Okay. It says fire came out from the presence of the Lord. What does that sound like? We just heard it. Yeah, it's the exact same phrase as 9:24, when he accepts their sacrifice and fire comes out from the presence of the Lord to burn up the burnt offering, okay, and God accepts. This is the same language. So Nadab and Abihu themselves have become a sacrifice, okay?
I was asking Austin when I read this. That was obviously sin. So did the next round of priests have to offer a sin offering because the first idiots made this mistake. And now that you just said that, I'm like, maybe they were the sin offering. I don't know. But
right.
There's no eating of this sin offering, is there?
But so eating of... For the high priest, and if the nation sins, remember, if the blood is taken into the tabernacle, then they don't eat the sin offering. But if it's you and me, an average Joe Schmoes bringing a sin offering, then the priest does eat part of it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They didn't really get a choice in the matter, though, did they?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah. Okay, so Nadab and Abihu were offering fire and incense in worship. Right? Now think about this. I don't know. I don't think that their intentions were necessarily bad or evil. Right? Whatever it is they did not follow God's law exactly. But they're probably like, oh, I'm just making this little change. It's not a big deal. Right? It wasn't, oh, I hate God and I think he's stupid and so I'm going to do things my own way. It wasn't necessarily that kind of attitude. It was, oh, God said this, but maybe I can just do it a little better. Right? It wasn't necessarily blatant rebellion. Maybe it was blatant rebellion. Okay? But it seems like whatever it was, they were trying to do, go through the motions, worship God. They just chose, right, to do it their own way.
Saul.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
But that's still disobedience.
Exactly. It is disobedience. But we look at it sometimes, even in our own lives, well, you know, it's just this little thing. It's just a little change. It's just a little deviation. And that's the point. Yep.
And that is not good enough for God.
Right.
He has to come and go through the motions.
Right, of worship.
That's not worship.
Yeah.
That's going through the motions. Get this done so we can go do what we want.
Right. No. Right, exactly. Okay, so because their worship was now an abomination to the Lord, they become the sacrifice. Okay. And it's the same with us, right? Either Jesus is our sacrifice, or we are the sacrifice. There is no option. There is no third way. Okay, so either we accept Christ as our sacrifice, or when we die, we become the sacrifice for our own sins. The words consumed, died before the Lord, those are sacrificial. It's sacrificial language. I mean, and even if you look at 9:24, it says the Lord consumed the burnt offering. So it's the same word that is used in when God burns up the burnt offering. So God is an all-consuming fire. Okay? Verse 3, then Moses said to Aaron, it is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I will be treated as holy, and before all the people, I will be honored. So Aaron therefore kept silent. Okay? The emphasis here is I will be treated as holy. This is about the holiness of God and his glory. And this is the theme of Leviticus. It's all about the holiness of God. The priests, we're going to find out in just a couple of verses, they were the ones that were supposed to teach the rest of the people the law of God and how to live according to the law of God. So God makes an example of them, right? You are to be the teachers of the people. So if you can't even do it right, the punishment for you is going to be greater than for the people. The more knowledge, the higher the position, the greater the judgment. And the New Testament teaches the same idea as well, right? Few of you should want to become teachers, right? Because there is a greater judgment. What's very interesting is if you go to Numbers, can someone read for me Numbers 20, verse 8 to 12? Numbers 20, verses 8 to 12.
Take the rod, and you and your brother Aaron assemble the congregation and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it may yield its water. You shall thus bring forth water for them out of the rock, and let the congregation of their beasts drink. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, just as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock. And he said to them, listen now, you rebels, shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock? Then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came forth abundantly in the congregation, and their beasts drank. Through 12?
Yes.
Good. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, therefore, you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them.
Okay. So, Moses is angry, right? You rebels. And he's probably angry, right? Because the Israelites are complaining for the gajillionth time, right? He is out of patience. God says, speak to the rock, and he hits it. Which in our head, not that big of an error, right? But what does God say to Moses? Moses should have had a deja vu moment right here, right? Because Moses said almost these exact words to Aaron after Nadab and Abihu died, right? Because you did not treat me as holy. So Moses gets punished. Now, he doesn't get burned up with fire, right, from God, but he's not allowed to go into the land. He is punished because he, one small thing, he was angry, and in his anger, he struck the rock. At least, that's what I think. That's Mesha's interpretation. Don't take that as inspired. It seems like that, at least from his words, right? He strikes the rock instead of speaks to it. And even in that one small deviation, it is not complete obedience to the Lord. He is not, you know, and the thing is, the people might not have even known, right? I don't know if the people knew that Moses was supposed to speak to the rock instead of hit the rock. Because there's another time he hits the rock because God told him to hit the rock, right? So the people will be like, oh, well, here we go again, magic water, right, out of a rock. But God knew and Moses knew that he disobeyed. And so now he and Aaron do not get to go into the land because they did not treat God as holy. Same language.
It
says, but the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel. Therefore, you shall not bring this assembly into the land, which I have given you. What?
Is that when the wandering starts?
No, I think the wandering is already, no, the wandering has already started. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think it's close to being over when he says he can't go into land. I can't remember my history exactly. His son? Or yeah. Okay.
Point where God asks him just to hit it once, but then he hits it twice.
No, I believe that's the only time he disobeys. I mean, here he hits it twice, but God told him to speak to it, and he hit it instead. Okay? So.
I heard once that also points to Christ's crucifixion. He didn't listen to God. He lashed out, and then God took, or Christ took all of our anger and our sin.
Yep. Yes. Okay, if you go back to Leviticus, by those who come near me, I will be treated as holy, and before all the people, I will be honored. Okay, so the priest's job was to represent all of Israel. They were to be the mediators. Okay, and when the high priest walked into the Holy of Holies, remember, he had their names engraved on him, on his clothes, and all the different stones that represented Israel, right? So he was to represent all of Israel. Nadab and Abihu disobeyed God before all of Israel, okay? And so they were consumed before all of Israel, ultimately bringing glory to God before all of Israel, okay? And that's part of the reason this punishment was so harsh, is because they are to be the mediators, okay? In chapter 9, verse 24, when God sends fire to burn the offering, the people shout and fall on their faces in worship. Now God sends fire to consume Nadab and Abihu, and Aaron is silent. Okay? He realizes the seriousness of the holiness of God. He
can't. I wonder, because it says Aaron, therefore, after Moses told him.
Right.
The Lord spoke, then he was silent.
Right.
Like he was going to speak out before that.
Maybe. Quite possible. I mean, he's the father. He just lost half of his sons. So yeah, I'm sure he's upset. I mean, we find out later in the chapter he's upset. He's not happy, right? But he knows he can't say anything because God is holy. Okay.
Doesn't the next part of it also say that he can't grieve because then grieving will disqualify him?
Yep. Okay. So God is sovereign. He gets to determine how he is approached and how he is worshipped. We don't get a say. And that grates against us as humans because from the garden, right, we want to be God and we want to have our little say. Okay, God says that's not how it works, even in how he is worshipped. John Calvin, and he said this about this passage. If we reflect how holy a thing God's worship is, the enormity of the punishment will by no means offend us. Besides, it was necessary that their religion should be sanctioned at its very commencement. For God had suffered the sons of Aaron to transgress with impunity, they would have afterwards carelessly neglected the whole law. This, therefore, was the reason for such great severity, that the priests should anxiously watch against all profanation. Okay, now, they transgressed against the whole law anyway. Okay, but at least from the start, they knew God was serious. They knew this was a big deal, and that you had to treat God as holy. Questions, verses 1 through 3. All right, can someone read for me verses 4 to 11?
Moses called also to Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Aaron's uncle, Uziel, and said to them, come forward and carry your relatives away from the front of the sanctuary to the outside of the camp. So they came forward and carried them still in their tunics to the outside of the camp, as Moses had said. Then Moses said to Aaron and to his sons Eleazar and Ithamar, do not uncover your heads, nor tear your clothes, so that you may not die, and that he may not become wrathful against all the congregation. But your kinsmen, the whole house of Israel, shall bewail the burning which the Lord has brought about. You shall not even go out from the doorway of the tent of meeting, lest you die, for the Lord's anointing oil is upon us. So they did according to the word of Moses. How far?
11, please.
Okay. The Lord then spoke to Aaron, saying, do not drink wine or strong drink, neither you nor your sons with you, when you come into the tent of meeting, so that you may not die. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and so as to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, and between the unclean and the clean. And so as to teach the sons of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them through Moses. Then Moses spoke to Aaron.
That's good. That's good. That's fine. Okay. So if we go to Leviticus 21. Can someone read for me verse 1 through 4?
Father, son, daughter, or brother. He may make himself unclean for his young unmarried sister in his immediate family. He is not to make himself unclean for those related to him by marriage and so defile himself.
Okay, and then if we look down at verses 10 to 12, it says, the priest who is the highest among his brothers, on whose head the anointing oil has been poured, and who has been consecrated to wear the garments, shall not uncover his head nor tear his clothes, nor shall he approach any dead person, nor defile himself even for his father or his mother, nor shall he go out of the sanctuary, nor profane the sanctuary of his God, for the consecration of the anointing oil of his God is on him. I am the Lord. Okay, so the high priest, even if his mom or dad died, he was not to leave the tabernacle when he was on duty. He was not to mourn and go out to the funeral and be near the corpse, because that would have made him ceremonially unclean. But.
That's not what it says in 21:2 and 3.
Right. So these are for the priests, is in 2 and 3, and 10 through 12 is for the high priest. Okay, so normally the priests, if they're serving, right, and their mom dies, they can then go attend the funeral and become ceremonially unclean, right, and then they would have to go through the process of becoming clean again. If you're high priest, you're not even allowed to do that, okay? Here in Leviticus 10, the rules for the high priests are in this specific situation applied to Eleazar and Ithamar as well, because Eleazar and Ithamar are just normal priests. So theoretically, their brothers have just been incinerated. So they should be allowed to be make themselves unclean and attend the funeral and mourn and all that, okay? But in this situation, God is applying the rules of for the high priest to them as well, okay? Because most likely because of the situation of their death, right? They died directly by God's judgment. This was not a normal death. This was not death by old age or death by accident, okay? So Aaron's cousins, the sons of his uncle, right, have to remove the bodies because a priest cannot come near the dead, okay? It makes them unclean, right? And for the normal priest, they're not allowed to be around other dead, just their immediate family, right? Not even their sister. If their sister's married, right, now she's out of the family. She's in another family, so the priest won't even make himself unclean for her, okay? So they're not allowed to mourn. And the threat is, right, that if they do, if you look at verse 6, it says, then Moses said to Aaron and to his sons Eleazar and Ithamar, do not uncover your heads nor tear your clothes, right, signs of mourning, so that you will not die and that he will not become wrathful against all the congregation. The threat is if you mourn the death of your son's brothers, then God's going to turn his wrath on all of Israel. Yes. Right. It's going to be a public display because later on we see that God does have compassion on Aaron. Okay. But they're not allowed to do any of the outward signs of mourning. Okay. They're not allowed to attend a funeral. They're not allowed to do any of those things.
Just the public. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Nadab and Abihu have been directly judged by God, so the remaining priests, they have to align themselves with God. Okay, they have to agree that God was in the right, Nadab and Abihu were in the wrong. Okay, they're not even allowed to leave the tabernacle for a funeral. If you notice verse 4, okay, they're to be carried out to outside of the camp. Okay, this is where sacrifices are taken. This is where the sin offering for the high priest and for the nation is burned, right? If you remember, their blood is taken inside the tabernacle. The carcass is taken outside the camp and burned, right? Remember, that's why we said Jesus is crucified outside the camp. They're also taken in their tunics, okay? So they couldn't have been, their clothes at least were not incinerated because there was at least something. So how exactly this fire worked and killed them, I don't know, but. I don't. That's a good question. I can look it up. I think it meant consumed, but I will look that up. Mm-hmm. So the garments that symbolize their high calling were now used as shrouds for their burial. Okay.
The same kind of clothing we talked about in Exodus?
Yes. But no, okay. So just for the high priest. We did briefly talk about the clothing for the other priests, but it was a lot more simple. I think it was linen, and then they wore a turban. And
those special stones?
No, that is all for the breastpiece and the ephod and all that. That's just the high priest. Okay. Yep. Okay. Okay. Notice Aaron and his sons cannot mourn, but who is supposed to mourn? The whole house of Israel. So everyone else, okay? So you three, Aaron, Eleazar, and Ithamar, you are not to mourn, but everybody else, you pay attention and you bewail, okay? You mourn. This is supposed to be a lesson to all. You are to treat God as holy. Okay, now, the death of Nadab and Abihu, this creates a large problem. The sacrificial system has just been instituted. And now the tabernacle itself is unclean. Okay? Because you have dead bodies in the tabernacle, right? According to rabbis, touching a corpse was the father of the fathers of uncleanness. Okay, so a dead body is like the ultimate, you can't get more unclean than a dead body. And now you have two of them lying in the tabernacle, okay? Outside the sanctuary. And as of this point, there is no instruction on how to fix that problem. How do we fix that now the place we worship is unclean? How am I supposed to be made right with God when even the church, the tabernacle, is unclean? Okay, it doesn't work. So this is going to be a problem until Leviticus 16. But Leviticus, the instructions of Leviticus 16 actually happen on this very day. Okay, but in Scripture, in the way we have it, we have chapters 11 to 15 in between Leviticus 10 and Leviticus 16. 16 is Day of Atonement. Yep.
So hold up for a moment.
Yes.
So wait, where was the part, which verse was the, this is a problem?
Oh, it doesn't, it's just, it doesn't say that.
Okay.
The Bible doesn't say, this is a big problem. No, it's just, there are dead bodies, okay? And we know, right, that the priest cannot touch a dead body because it makes him ceremonially unclean. Okay, we also know, just from, because we know ahead what's going to happen in Leviticus 16, right, that the whole tabernacle gets cleansed. Okay, the Day of Atonement is like a big reset button for all of Israel. Okay, it cleanses the tabernacle from all its uncleanness, and it cleanses the nation from all their uncleanness. Okay,
so chronologically,
yes,
Leviticus 16 is going to happen right now.
Yes,
chronologically,
yes,
and then 11 through 15
might happen now, it might have happened,
who knows when.
Right? But so the solution is offered immediately. Okay, Day of Atonement. However, in the middle, we have Leviticus 11 through 15, which is going to be, you know, our favorite part of Leviticus, all the clean, unclean laws. Okay, the dietary laws and the childbirth laws and the skin disease laws and everyone's favorite part of Leviticus.
They could have been given now, or they could,
yes,
have been given later and just inserted.
Correct.
Into the narrative.
Correct. And the idea, we're going to get, well, we read it. So if you look at verse 10, it says, and so as to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, between the unclean and the clean. This is the job of the priest. They're to decide what is clean and what is unclean. How do they do that? They have to know the rules. So God's going to give them the rules. So being clean and unclean is set up in context of Nadab and Abihu. Right, it's bookended by Nadab and Abihu, actually, because you have Nadab and Abihu chapter 10, you have Nadab and Abihu the first verse of chapter 16. Okay, in the middle we have clean and unclean. So in our heads we're like, oh my goodness, snooze fest, I don't get it, right? To the Jew this is like, oh my goodness, this is so important, because if I don't do this I'm going to end up like Nadab and Abihu. Okay, and the priest, this is very important for the priest, because they have to know, because they're the ones that make the distinction. They're the ones that teach the people. Okay? Any other questions?
So does God speak to Moses for all these laws again? Like,
yes.
Similar to Mount Sinai? Because I know it says, then the Lord spoke.
Yes, verse chapter 11, verse 1, then the Lord spoke again to Moses and Aaron. Okay. Okay, so verse 8. Then the Lord spoke to Aaron. This is the only time in Leviticus that God speaks to Aaron alone. God either speaks to Moses or he speaks to Moses and Aaron. Okay, this is the only time he speaks to Aaron alone. It's significant because his sons just died, right? But God is confirming that he still has a role to play as high priest. And God is basically giving him his marching orders, his job as a high priest. What is he is supposed to do? Okay? So
you say it was the only time God spoke to Aaron in Leviticus.
Alone.
In Leviticus. Does that include all scripture?
I believe it does. I can't be sure of that. I know, though, there's the time when Aaron and Miriam get jealous of Moses and they say, God doesn't just speak to you. So I don't know if there was another time that God just spoke to Aaron. I don't know. But at least in Leviticus, this is the only time that God speaks to Aaron. Okay? So because his sons just died, right? I'm pretty sure Aaron's going to pay really close attention to every word that God has to say. First thing he says, do not drink wine or strong drink, neither you nor your sons with you when you come into the tent of meeting, so that you will not die. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations. Okay? So.
On the job, no wine or strong drink.
Yep. Okay, so why this instruction now? There are a couple theories. One, maybe Nadab and Abihu were drunk, right? We talked about that. Okay, so maybe that's why this is here. Okay, let's go to Proverbs 31. Does anyone know off the top of their head? That is Proverbs 31, but there's also verses before that. Proverbs 31, 6 and 7. Okay, so Proverbs 31 says you give drink to those who are really hurting. Okay, so this possibly might be another admonition not to mourn. You're not allowed to mourn. You're not allowed to tear your clothes. You're not allowed to cut your hair. And don't you go bearing your sorrows in the drink either. Okay, so possible. What? Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, no, because we're not going to. Okay.
I mean, just the way you said it. Like,
I know.
When you think about, like,
well, okay, if you look up at verse 4. Of 31, it says, it is not for kings, O Lemuel. Okay, so this is a king, right? And then he is also the one that does the Proverbs 31 woman. But it is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, or for rulers to desire strong drink. For they will drink and forget what is decreed, and pervert the rights of all who are afflicted. Give strong drink to him who is perishing. So I don't know if it's a command, or if it's more like a, this is when people drink, is when they're like, in the depths of despair, but you, O king, don't drink. It's going to just give you problems. Okay.
I was going to say, I wonder if it was somewhat medicinal.
It was. They used to, in Jesus' time, they used to add wine to water to purify the water, and their alcohol was also much, you had to drink a ton of it in order to get drunk because it was not as potent as our alcohol is today. Yes. Okay. Proverbs, while we're in Proverbs, I just turned there. Proverbs 20, verse 1, it says, wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler, and whoever is intoxicated by it is not wise. Okay? So the priests, they're supposed to make the distinctions between clean and unclean, holy and profane. When you're drunk, you're not going to be able to do that. Okay? 1 Timothy 3, 2 to 3 is qualifications for an overseer or elder. Okay, one of them is don't be addicted to wine, okay? Be sober. So same in the New Testament as well. Okay, so they had to have good judgment, and a mistake could lead to death, right? So that you will not die. That's what God says. All right, so this is very serious, and they just saw someone who made a mistake and died. Okay, so this sets up chapters 11 through 15. All about laws of clean and unclean, and actually 17 to the end of the book is about holy and profane as well. Okay, so this sets up really the rest of the book. Then it says, verse 11, and so as to teach the sons of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them through Moses. So I think we think of priests and we think of sacrifices and working in the tabernacle temple and doing all that stuff. But their job was also to be a teacher of Israel as well. Okay, and we see this if we go to 2 Chronicles. I'll read it because it's a lot of names. Then in the 7 to 9, 2 Chronicles 17, 7 to 9. Then in the third year of his reign, he sent all these officials to teach in the cities of Judah. And with them were all these Levites. Okay, verse 9, they taught in Judah, having the book of the law of the Lord with them, and they went throughout all the cities of Judah and taught among the people. Okay, so the priests and the Levites, their job was to teach the people the law. And if you just turn back a page or two, 2 Chronicles 15, verse 3 says, "For many days Israel was without the true God and without a teaching priest and without the law."
What verse is that?
2 Chronicles 15, verse 3. Okay. 2 Chronicles 17, 7 to 9. And it just lists the names of all the people that were teachers, okay? But the idea is that this is what the priests were supposed to do. They were, their job was not just in the tabernacle slash temple. It was also teaching the people the law, okay? Related to this teaching was also the involvement of the priests in copying biblical manuscripts, since most of the scribes were also priests. So this is how we get scripture passed down, was it was part of the jobs of the priests. Okay, questions? Yeah.
Did the high priest bring their offerings before the Lord or after?
They brought their offering before the Lord. Okay, can someone read for me verses 12 to 20?
And your sons from the fire offering to the Lord, for this is what I have commanded. But you and your sons and your daughters may eat the breast of the presentation offering and the thigh of the contribution in any ceremonial clean place, because these portions have been assigned to you and your children from the Israelites' fellowship sacrifices. They are to bring the thigh of the contribution and the breast of the presentation offering together with the offerings of fat portions made by the fire to wave as a presentation offering before the Lord. It will belong permanently to you and your children, as the Lord has commanded. Later, Moses inquired about the male goat of the sin offering, but it had already been burned up. He was angry with Eleazar and Ithamar, Aaron's surviving sons. He asked, "Why did you eat the sin offering, and why didn't you eat the sin offering in the sanctuary area? For it is especially holy, and God, he has assigned it to you to take away the guilt of the community and to make atonement for them before the Lord. Since its blood was not brought inside the sanctuary, you should have eaten it in the sanctuary area, as I commanded." But Aaron replied to Moses, "See, today they presented their sin offering and their burnt offering before the Lord. Since these things have happened to me, if I had eaten the sin offering today, would it have been acceptable in the Lord's sight?" When Moses heard this, it was acceptable to him.
Okay, so verse 12 to 15. Moses gets right back to business, okay? The day is not done. The sacrifices have been made, but apparently the priests hadn't eaten their portions yet when Nadab and Abihu do their business and die. Okay, so now they have deviated from what God said and died. So Moses wants to be very sure that the rest of the day is completed correctly. Okay, so he instructs the two remaining sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, to eat their portion of the sacrifices. Okay, then, verse 16 to 18, he discovers that the goat of the sin offering had not been eaten, but it had been burned up. So, I don't know if they had saved a portion to be eaten, and then after Nadab and Abihu died, they're like, forget it, we're burning it. Or, if that offering hadn't been completely made yet, before Nadab and Abihu died, and so when they did make the offering, they just burned the whole thing instead of saving a portion to eat. I don't know which one, but regardless, the goat had been fully burned instead of a portion of it saved to eat, okay? So Moses gets angry, and you can understand why. Nadab and Abihu disobeyed, it seems like in a small way, and they got burned by the Lord. Now Moses is like, we're not going to have any priests left. God's going to burn up Eleazar and Ithamar, and we're going to be left with no one. Okay? So he's upset because they had also disobeyed God's command. All right? So what an inaugural day for the priesthood, or for the sacrificial system. Nadab and Abihu die, Eleazar and Ithamar disobey. Okay? The priest's eating of the sacrifices was an important part of the sacrificial system. Okay? It was to be completed that way. Because that's what God had said. So all of God's laws were to be obeyed. Okay, so it says he's angry with Eleazar and Ithamar, but then in verse 19, it's Aaron who speaks. So Aaron intervenes on behalf of his sons. And basically, he says, in light of the circumstances, he could not have enjoyed the meat of the sacrificed. Right? Already the priesthood has failed. Aaron's attitude does not reflect flagrant disobedience. Okay? He is humble about it. And basically, he's saying, my two sons died. I can't enjoy a meal of meat. Remember, meat was not common. You didn't have it every meal. You know, you certainly not three meals a day. So this was a special time, and it was supposed to be a time of rejoicing. And Aaron says, I can't do it. Okay. I'm not allowed to mourn outwardly. I'm not allowed to go to a funeral. But sorry, I can't eat meat. Then at verse 20, it says, when Moses heard that, it seemed good in his sight. And the implication is that if Moses is satisfied, then God is satisfied as well. Because he is the mediator between God and the priests, basically. Okay, so we can see that God is sympathetic to Aaron for his loss. He tells him he can't mourn. He tells him he can't go to a funeral. He can't leave the tabernacle. But God is sympathetic because he knows Aaron has lost two of his sons that day. So our lesson from Leviticus 10, or one of our lessons, right, is that we need to make sure that we worship God the way he wants to be worshiped, and not just in a way that makes us feel good. One of the commentators, he said, a lot of our modern day contemporary worship is more focused on man than God. And he asked, you know, is it worship more in lines of Nadab and Abihu than in what God wants from us, right? He wants true worship of the heart. He wants an obedient spirit, a broken spirit, and a contrite heart, right? Not an outward show of a whole performance, right? So we need to make sure that our worship also, now, we're most likely not going to get burned up with fire, but, you know, we still need to view God as holy. Questions, chapter 10. All right, chapter 11, our favorite part, dietary laws. Okay, so I have quite a long introduction for this. Okay, so these are going to be food laws, what they're allowed to eat, what animals specifically they're allowed to eat, and which ones they are not. Okay, so these laws basically reflect the holiness of God and the widespread effect of sin. Okay, so first thing to understand, ceremonial cleanliness. Or cleanness, okay? This is not, they're not going to be, Misha, get your words. Okay, clean versus unclean is not a right versus wrong or a holy versus sin, okay? If you are unclean, that doesn't mean you sinned, okay? This is a matter of preference. So God's preference. So the thing is, even in your preferences, are you going to choose to prefer what God prefers, or are you going to choose to prefer what you prefer? Okay, so God wants all of our lives. He wants all of Israel to be holy. So he is going to tell them what he prefers. And now they need to choose to prefer what God prefers. So a lot of the things that make you unclean, they're not sin issues. This is not a right versus wrong issue. This is a how close do you want to be to God issue. Okay? So all of this, chapters 11 through 15, is an expansion on chapter 10:10, where it says the priests have to differentiate between holy and profane, between clean and unclean. The quote-unquote normal status of Israel was to be clean. The normal status of the priests was to be holy, because they were set apart from God. Okay, we talked about this in the introduction, right? The holy can be profaned and become unclean, right? Then the unclean has to be cleansed to be clean, and then the clean has to be sanctified to become holy, okay? So clean is a step closer to God, but holy is consecrated to God. Does that make sense? So it's kind of a progression. Okay, so again, being unclean is not a sin or the result of a specific sin. Right? Because if you had leprosy, right, you were unclean. You could not come to the temple or tabernacle to worship. But that is not necessarily a result of sin. You have a sickness, you have a disease, but you are still unclean. Okay? So being unclean is not a sin, but it is treated as being generally or ultimately the result of sin, right? Sickness is a result of sin. So because you are sick doesn't mean that you specifically sinned, but your sickness is a result of sin in the world. And so therefore you cannot come into the tabernacle and worship God that way. Okay, so that is why we're going to, when we study, sometimes you offered a sin offering to cleanse yourself. But when you offer a sin offering, there's no talk about forgiveness. Okay, so it's not that your sin offering is for a specific sin that you need to be forgiven from, but it is more for the general idea that this is sin in the world, right? So I bring a sin offering. I don't need to be forgiven of a specific sin to be cleansed from X, Y, Z, but there is sin in the world, therefore I bring a sin offering to be cleansed. To be unclean was to be excluded from the presence of God. This is why it's such a big deal. Okay. Yahweh dwelt among Israel, but you could not enjoy full fellowship with him if you were unclean. Okay, so deeper fellowship with God is the goal of holiness, and the clean, unclean laws are set in the context of pursuing holiness. Okay, so you want to be clean so that you can come worship God, have fellowship with God. Okay, so now for the diet specifically. The idea of clean and unclean animals is not new to Leviticus. Does anybody have any idea where it starts?
After the flood?
Yes, not even after the flood, before the flood. Okay, Genesis 7, verse 2.
I just remember us making a big point, like, in the beginning of Genesis, it says plants that we eat.
Yes.
And then after the flood, that's when we get
animals. Okay, after the flood, we get animals to eat. Yes, but even chapter 7, verse 2, this is before the flood. Genesis 7, verse 2.
You are to take with you seven pairs, a male and its female, of all clean animals, and two of the animals that are not clean, a male and its female.
Okay, so Noah had to know which animals were clean and which animals were not clean, because he was to take 14, you know, we say 2 by 2. Well, some of them were 14 by 14, okay? The clean animals, he was to take 14 of them, presumably so that after the flood, right, he has animals he can sacrifice, right? Because he offers up a burnt offering after the flood. Well, if you only have 2 sheep and you offer up one, you're in trouble. Okay, so God says, bring 14, bring 7 pairs of the clean. And if you look at verse 3, it's even 7 of all the birds of the sky, 7 pairs, okay? So the clean, unclean idea would not have been new to Israel. They should have had some context for these laws. And maybe this, maybe they would have already kind of intuitively known most of this, and God is just specifically laying it out what is clean and what is unclean. In Genesis, we don't get a list of what is clean and what is unclean. It's just like Noah already knew. Okay. Israel's diet, observing the Sabbath, and circumcision are the 3 things that really set them apart from the other nations. Now, there's going to be a whole bunch of other laws that set them apart as well, but these 3 things were the big, big one. Their diet, circumcision, and observing the Sabbath. Archaeologically, they can identify a Jewish site by the lack of pig bones. Okay, so when they're digging up a site, if there's no pig bones, they know it was a Jewish site. That is how distinct their diet laws are. What is interesting to me is they abandoned the law, basically, but it seems like this part of the law they kept. I mean, a lot of them even keep it to this day. Okay, even if you're not necessarily religious. Now, there are plenty of Jews that... Yes. Well, yes, because the Jews don't accept Acts 10. Yes, they don't accept any of it. Okay, so, but Israel's diet was a theological message to the nations that God is holy. Okay, you are not just to eat whatever you want. There are specific things you eat, specific things you don't. Now, why did God pick the animals that he picked that you can eat and the animals that you can't eat? Okay. So I'm going to give you 5 theories. Is that funny? Okay. Okay, this first one, this is what Abner said. Okay, he says, society as a whole viewed certain animals as gross or unclean and associated with death. Okay, and this goes back to the idea that the clean, unclean idea has been around since creation, basically, since the flood. Okay, but other nations, they would view an animal as unclean or associated with death, but they would eat them anyway, like a pig. Okay, but God is associated with life and not death, and nothing that is gross or unclean. So Israel abstains from the animals that as a society people have viewed as unclean. Okay? So that's one theory. The second theory is that unclean animals were those animals that were used in pagan worship or associated with pagan deities. Yes, the unclean animals. So then God says you can't eat any of those because they're related to the pagans. Okay, the problem is the Canaanites typically also sacrifice bulls, sheep, and goats, okay, which is were clean and were what the Jews sacrificed. Now, maybe they sacrificed other things as well, but those were also primarily their sacrifices as well. So that theory kind of falls apart. Okay, this one you might have heard, okay? It's the hygienic theory, right? That the unclean animals carry diseases. Okay, they're carrion eaters or pigs. You know, if you don't cook the meat properly, you get whatever disease. Okay? Now, this might have been a byproduct of the laws, is that the Israelites were more healthy. Okay? But it's probably not the rationale behind it, because in Acts 10, God says, eat whatever you want. Okay? So if God's really concerned about your health through what you eat, then why did it change? Okay? Four. Okay, this is a different one, but it oddly kind of makes sense, but it's a little weird, okay? This theory is that the clean animals are those that move, quote-unquote, normally in their sphere, okay? As you read Leviticus 11, there is a lot of talk about how an animal moves, okay? For the land animals, they have to have hooves, right, and chew the cud. For fish, they have to have scales and fins, okay? For winged critters, for birds, you can't eat the ones that eat dead things, okay? But for, like, insects, you can't eat the ones that swarm, okay, or move erratically. For mice and lizards, they're also said to be swarming, move erratically. So there's a lot of comments on how animals move. So one theory is that the clean animals are the ones that move normally in their sphere, and the unclean animals are those that move not normally in their sphere. The problem with that theory is God created all those animals. So who says what's normal and what's not? But it's a theory. Okay? The fifth is what I think Julie said, is that the laws are arbitrary and only God knows the reasons, and so Israel has to obey just because God said so. Which there might be something to that as well, okay? But I'm sure, you know, it might be a mix of them, you know? Maybe, you know, the hygienic theory, you know, maybe that is part of it. Maybe not the main part, but, you know, it's at least a benefit. Regardless of which view is chosen, okay? The dietary laws made Israel clearly distinct from the nations, okay? They could not even share a meal with the Gentiles unless the Gentiles ate their food. Okay, they could not go and eat at a Gentile's house. That was unclean, okay? The laws pointed to God's holiness and set Israel apart as an example. Okay, we're going to see a lot of the laws. It is setting Israel apart. They are to be a holy nation, a nation of priests, right? They're not only to be clean, they are to be holy eventually. A whole nation of priests, not just the Levites, but everybody. Okay, and so all these clean, unclean laws are to help set them apart. Okay? Questions before we dive into Leviticus 11. Okay, verse 1 to 8. I'll read it real quick. The Lord spoke again to Moses and to Aaron, saying to them, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, these are the creatures which you may eat from all the animals that are on the earth, whatever divides a hoof, thus making split hooves, and choose the cud among the animals that you may eat. Nevertheless, you are not to eat of these among those who chew the cud or among those which divide the hoof, the camel, for though it chews the cud, it does not divide the hoof, and on it goes. Okay, so you can't have one or the other. You have to have both. It has to divide the hoof and chew the cud. Basically, ox, sheep, and goats. Okay, which are the things that God, quote unquote, eats through sacrifice. Okay, so Israel's diet, God's diet, mirrors God's diet. Acceptable. Deuteronomy 14, 4 through 5 gives a more detailed list, and this includes deer and mountain goats and other things like that, okay? But these animals, the ox, sheep, and goats at least, are domesticated and herbivores, okay? The clean animals are all herbivores, okay? No carnivores are clean, okay? So both qualifications have to be met. If you look at verse 8, it says, you shall not eat of their flesh nor touch their carcasses. They are unclean to you. Okay, so an unclean animal only makes you unclean if you eat it or touch their dead body. Right? So, I don't know. If you have a pet rabbit, you can have a pet rabbit. It's fine. No problem. Okay? Just don't eat it. And when it's dead, if you get rid of the body, you're going to be unclean. Okay, what was your question?
Touch it with a tool? Like if you're not physically touching it,
I don't know.
The tool that's touching unclean animals?
I don't know. Probably that would make you unclean because then that probably makes the tool unclean and now you're touching the tool.
Oh boy.
Okay. But. Okay, but we're going to get into the rules of how to take care of yourself when you're unclean, and actually touching a dead animal is one of the least unclean things you can do. Like, it's the easiest to become clean from. All you had to do was wash your clothes and you were unclean till evening. So it wasn't like a lasting, I mean, there are other things that make you unclean for days or weeks or years. Okay, so this, in the scale of uncleanness, is pretty low. Correct. You couldn't go to the tabernacle that day.
Verse 5, what's a sheepman?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Anybody got
something different? Verse 5,
rock
band. I have Hyrax.
I have a small shy, well, in the middle, it says a small shy furry animal found in the peninsula of the Sinai, northern Israel, and the region around the Dead Sea. In the KJV, it says coney, which isn't that a type of rabbit? Yeah, and the original NASB says a rock badger. When in my study they say a lot of these terms, it's hard to translate the Hebrew. It's hard to know exactly what animal they're talking about. Because I'm sure a lot of them are probably only found here and in Deuteronomy and then, you know, not mentioned anywhere else. So, okay. Okay, so... Again, Israel is going to obey these laws because they have been chosen. They are to be different. Their diet distinguishes them from the nations. Okay. Today, we talk a lot about being relevant and reaching the lost, which can be good, but it depends on how you do it, right? Leviticus is all about being different and standing apart and being totally different from the other nations around you. Yes, we want to reach the lost, but we need to do it by being different, not by being as like them as we can. God said, Israel, you be as unlike the rest of the world as you can. Okay, verse 9 through 12, fish. Verse 9, these you may eat, whatever is in the water. All that have fins and scales, these you may eat. Okay, so this is pretty straightforward. You can basically eat a fish. But shrimp, lobster, crab, all those unclean. Okay?
So would that qualify as like crustaceans?
Yes.
Or is there anything else that in that group that's unclean that's not quite a crustacean?
I don't know. Whatever is in the water that is not the fish, don't eat. Okay. That has fins and a scale. I don't know. My marine biology is not good.
Whales? What are they? Is that considered fish?
No. A whale's a mammal. They don't have scales.
I meant like in this though.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying they don't have scales, so they wouldn't be,
just
fish. Just your what you think of as a normal fish. Okay. Yeah, right.
They don't know what they're missing.
Well, remember, they couldn't have pigs either, right? So no bacon. Okay, but it's interesting. My commentary said water creatures without fins and scales were often avoided by the Egyptians and Romans as well. Okay, so this was not... Like I said, this idea of clean, unclean had existed from way before this time. So Abner's idea that there were animals that people viewed as gross or unclean seems legitimate because this idea had carried forward for a very long time.
Yeah. And they needed that waterproof skin. Some Bible said porpoise. Some dolphin. So, since we haven't really discussed the mammal side of everything, are they clean or unclean?
Well, seeing as we don't exactly know what it is, but okay, remember these rules are also coming after the tabernacle's been built.
Sure.
So whatever it was that they needed, I mean, okay, and we're going to find out, right, that even a clean animal, if it's not killed the proper way, if you touch its dead body, you're unclean. Okay, so death, basically, unless you are ritually slaughtering the animal for sacrifice, right, or killing it properly for food, which they didn't normally do, right, a dead animal made you unclean. Death makes you unclean because death is opposite to God, right? Death is a result of, even the death of a sacrificial animal is a result of sin, right? Because only because Adam and Eve sinned does then God offer a sacrifice to then clothe them, right? To cover their nakedness. So any sort of death, I mean, and that's what we're going to see. Basically all these animals, if they're alive, that's fine. You just can't eat them, but you become unclean when you touch their dead body. So, and even if they're collecting the porpoise skins, right, or making leather out of the cow hide, the cow that dropped dead in the field, right? You might be unclean touching the carcass, but then you clean yourself, and now you have the skin. Well, you can do what you want with the skin and make your sack or whatever, and I think you should be probably fine. It's just touching the dead body. And again, these laws are coming after the tabernacle is made, so it's, you know, and God is dwelling before... God did, well, he kind of did dwell with them. He was up Sinai or with them in a cloud or fire, right? But remember, his revelation is also progressive.
Right.
So he doesn't hold them accountable.
There's more of a grace.
Yes.
They don't know yet because he hasn't told them.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. We are held far more accountable because God has given us his full revealed word. Again, okay, so creatures without fins and scales, a lot of times, not all of them, okay, they can be regarded as scavengers because they roam the ocean floor, typically. Now, a whale's not going to do that, but a whale also doesn't have fins and a scale. Okay, Leviticus 11, 13 to 19. Okay, a lot of these words, they're not 100% sure what they are, okay? And if you have notes in the middle, it should give you alternatives as well of what they are. Okay, these are birds, and basically the law with birds is birds of prey and carrion eaters. Okay, so if it's a bird, owls eat mice, okay, you can't eat an owl, or vultures eat dead things, okay, you can't eat those. So basically the rule is birds of prey or carrion eaters don't eat. Okay, and notice it says you shall detest, verse 13, they are abhorrent. Okay, so these seem to be stronger words, but the idea is they're going to make you unclean. Okay, the idea is the same.
So what bird was okay?
Chicken. Pigeon. They offered pigeons as sacrifices. Turtle doves.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I read this, but there's so much.
I mean, okay, so but with the birds, it doesn't say which ones are okay. It just says which ones are not okay.
Okay.
It includes a bat in here. We know we would not classify a bat as a bird. Okay. In our, but it is a flying creature, and that's the idea. Okay. So we go from the land to the sea to the air. Okay. And then, so you have birds, but that's your main thing in the air. But then the next section, verse 20 to 23, these are also quote unquote in the air. These are winged insects, which literally means swarming things with wings. I think of gnats that you walk into in the summer, okay? You know. Okay, all the winged insects that walk on all fours, okay? Walking on all fours as opposed to upright, the number of legs is not important. You can't say insects have six legs, therefore the Bible is wrong. Okay. What do you mean?
Flies?
Oh, all swarming things are unclean. All winged insects are unclean except, it says, it has an exception. So all insects basically are unclean except for those who jump. Okay. It says those which above their feet jointed legs, which with they jump on the earth. So this is going to be your locust, your grasshopper, your cricket. And it gives four examples, the locust and its kind, the devastating locust and its kinds. What's the difference between those two? I have no idea. And the cricket and its kind and the grasshopper and its kinds. Okay, and if you remember, John the Baptist lives on locusts in the desert. Okay, apparently, locusts are very nutritious and they've been eaten for a long time in the Middle East. So there you go. Go eat your grasshopper.
So what did you say?
Yeah, I said walking on all fours as opposed to walking uprightly. So birds, right, only have 2 feet and walk uprightly. Okay, now, so these are also creatures of the air, but they walk on all fours, right? They walk down. The number of feet is not so important. The point of it is not the number of feet, that they really have 6 feet as opposed to 4 feet. The idea is they don't walk uprightly. Okay. Questions about any of that? I know we're going fast, but. Okay, Leviticus 24. Now we change over to kind of what you do when you do become unclean. Okay. Okay, again, only dead animals make you unclean. Touching a living unclean animal doesn't make you unclean. A camel, not clean. You could still use it to ride, work with. Okay. But again, verse 39, if you skip over there, it says, also, if one of the animals dies, which you have for food, the one who touches its carcass becomes unclean. So even clean animals, when they died, are unclean. The carcass is unclean. Okay? But look at verse 24. By these, moreover, you will be made unclean. Whoever touches their carcass becomes unclean until evening. Okay? So it's not that long of a time. I mean, and evening really is when the sun sets. The next day starts when the sun sets. Okay? So, I mean, I guess the longest is if you touch it first thing in the morning, right? Or you could wait until, you know, later in the afternoon if something needs to be removed. You know, then you just have to. Verse 25, it says, whoever picks up any of their carcasses shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. Okay? So maybe you take care of your dead animals later in the day or whatever if you want to. Wash your clothes.
Animals that died on their own, not one that you killed.
Correct. Correct. Well, I mean, verse 24, this is specifically unclean animals. So even if you kill an unclean animal, it's still the dead body's going to make you unclean. But it's only for the clean animals if you're sacrificing them in the tabernacle, right? The priests are dealing with dead animals all the time. That does not make them unclean. But if your cow or your sheep drops dead in the field and then you have to go remove it or bear whatever, take its hide for leather, when you are dealing with the dead animal, it's going to make you unclean. Okay? Okay, but notice, it's not that hard to become clean again. You just wash your clothes, you're unclean till evening, then you're clean at sundown. Okay? Okay. Also, it gives us another set of unclean animals here. Verse 27. Also, whatever walks on its paws. Okay, cats, bears, anything that makes a paw print, okay, those are unclean. And the one who picks up their carcass, again, washes clothes, unclean until evening. Okay, 29 to 31, these talk about the swarming things on the earth, okay, so we talked about swarming insects. These are swarming things on the earth like mice and lizards. Okay, their corpses also pollute, but this is a bigger problem. You're not going to have a bear come into your house and die. Okay, but you might have a gecko, you know, climb into your pot and die. Or you're going to have mice, you know, go skittering through your house. Okay, so these are a bigger problem because they actually can die on your stuff. Verse 32, also... Yes. Listen, also anything on which one of them may fall when they are dead becomes unclean. including any wooden article or clothing or skin or a sack. Any article of which use is made, it shall be put in water and be unclean until evening. Then it becomes clean. Okay? So either the mouse or the lizard or whatever falls on your stuff dead, or it crawls into your pot and can't get out and dies there. Okay? Either way, dead body in your stuff becomes unclean. So if it is wood, cloth, leather, sack, you just wash it with water. It's unclear whether you leave it soak until evening or you just wash it and then it's still just unclean until evening. Okay, but regardless, there's a way to clean it. It's just unclean until evening. Verse 33, if it's earthenware, you have to break it. Okay, and the contents are discarded. Yep, this is all going to be with the mice and the lizards and the whatevers, okay? Verse 35, it says, an oven or a stove shall be smashed, okay? An oven, now we think of an oven and a stove as the big metal things, okay? An oven was a large pot for boiling or baking, so it's just a pot, basically. And a stove was a cooking range that had two holes where you could put, you would build the fire underneath, I assume, and then you can put the two pots on it and cook that way. So they had to be broken and the contents are discarded. 34, any of the food which may be eaten on which water comes shall be unclean. Any liquid, unclean. So any of your food comes in contact with a dead body, you got to get rid of it. Verse 36 is an exception. Nevertheless, a spring or a cistern collecting water shall be clean, though the one who touches their carcass should be unclean. Remember, Israel, water is scarce. So they would make these big cisterns that rainwater would collect rainwater when it fell. Okay? If a lizard falls into one of these cisterns and drowns and dies, and you have to break the cistern and get rid of all the water, pretty soon there's going to be no water left. Okay? So God makes an exception for the big cisterns that are there to collect water. Okay? That there is an exception shows that there's nothing inherently bad about that lizard or that mouse. God created it too, okay? But the idea is that Israel is distinguishing themselves from the rest of the nations, okay? So God is not an unreasonable God, okay? Right, so that person becomes unclean again just till evening, but you don't have to break the cistern and you don't have to dump the water, okay? Now, if it falls in your water pot in the house, you know, you break that jar and you have to get rid of that water, okay? But you can go get more. That's a lot less than a whole cistern. Okay. We're just going to go through 40 and then we'll be done for today and we'll just do the last little bit next week. Okay? 37 and 38, if part of their carcass falls on any seed for sowing, which is to be sown, it is clean. Though if water is put on the seed and a part of their carcass falls on it, it is unclean. Okay, two theories here. Either one, water enables the impurity to penetrate the seed. Something bad from the rotting carcass makes the seed bad, I don't know. Or another theory is that the dry grain is for sowing in the ground. The wet grain is being used for food. It's being prepped for either eating or brewing, okay? So if it's going to be food that you're consuming, then you got to get rid of it. But if it's just going to be sown in the ground, then it's fine because it's dry.
And this is still the lizards and the rodents.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Lots of lizards and rodents.
Gotcha.
Okay. Then 39 through 40, we've talked about this. This is the clean animal that dies, okay, but not through ritual slaughter, but just dies for any other reason. If you touch it, you're unclean, or if you eat it, right? It's a clean animal, so you can eat it. But if you eat it and it has not been killed properly, then you are also unclean until evening, and you have to wash your clothes. Okay. Questions? Oh, that's okay. I know. We went fast. Right, so there's two theories. We're not sure. Okay, so if it's on a dry seed, it's fine. If the seed is wet, then it's you got to get rid of it. You got to toss the seed. It's unclean, okay? So, yeah, that's why one of the commentators said maybe the dry seed is for sowing in the ground, for growing more grain, and the wet seed is you're preparing it to cook. and to eat some way. And so then that's why the wet grain is unclean, because you are going to actually consume it. And so you can't eat something. You wouldn't want to eat something died on, I wouldn't think. But if you're planting it in the ground, you know, there's all kinds of stuff in the ground, and dead bodies decompose and fertilize. So then that's fine. Yeah.
And then the other one was, I'm behind.
That's okay.
So if the animal that you use for food dies, it becomes unclean.
If you touch the carcass, you're unclean, or if you eat it, you are unclean. The clean animal that you're allowed to eat.
Okay, because it's not killed in the way it needs to be.
Right. Which, you are not to eat the blood, so if it wasn't killed properly, I think you wouldn't want to eat it anyway, because then you'd be in danger of eating the blood as well. But this gives you the option that if you eat it, you would be unclean. But remember, being unclean means being separated from God and not being allowed to go to tabernacle. So, you know, the Israelites took it pretty seriously in order to, you know, to be clean, at least at certain points in their history. Questions? All right. Well, I know that was a whirlwind day, huh? We'll finish chapter 11 tomorrow, next week.